Welcome to Time After Time,
a non-sponsored, highly judgmental podcast about time travel
and love
and friendship
and the movies that bring them together into our living rooms.
I'm Helena.
And I'm Paige.
And maybe in an alternate timeline, you've already listened to this podcast
and you loved it.
Let's go. Just in time for Christmas, if only in Lindsay's dreams.
Wow, that was beautiful.
I thought I was going to make something different with the dreams part, but then I decided not to.
I think nothing can compare to the song in this movie.
Do you remember the tune?
I really want to.
Do we need to turn it on so we can...
Wait, also, I should have looked up, was it an original song written
for this movie? It had to be. It had to be.
Express.
No.
Expresso.
It's spelled wrong? What the
hell? Well, because it's spelled like ex, like your ex-boyfriend.
That's insane.
Giving you an espresso kiss.
That's insane.
Okay, welcome to the show. We're going to start off with the best song I've ever heard that played towards the end of this movie. Here you go.
More on that later. Take me back to those mornings when it was just you and I. Laying right there, hands intertwined, you felt like mine. Take me back to those evenings when you would sweet talk me. Breaking me right there, bodies combined, falling deeper in time.
The gist.
You get the gist.
What am I willing to risk for one more espresso kiss?
Incredible.
No, okay, Kaylin McKinnon, who sings the song, spells it correctly in this YouTube video.
But on all of the crediting stuff that we just saw on Google, it's spelled espresso
kiss, so... It does seem like it was written for this movie.
It would
have
to be. Because
on the YouTube... Her official YouTube channel, she says, so excited to finally share the song with all of you. You can also hear it in the Hallmark TV movie Just in Time for Christmas.
I mean, this seems like a great gig for her. I'm happy for her. It was heavily featured in basically the climax of the movie. So, you know, when she was really making the decision. So,
Well, it was post-decision. We'll get there.
Okay. We'll get there.
Anyway, that was Espresso Kiss. And the movie we're doing this week is
Just in Time for Christmas.
Another Hallmark original. They keep pumping them out.
Time travel, romance, Hallmark, Christmas. They can't be stopped. It's a genre that can't be stopped. We're really getting ourselves in the mood. We have some hot chocolate today. Mm-hmm. We are cozy and we are ready for some Hallmark goodness.
And we're back in the same room.
Yeah.
We have a microphone this time.
Which makes us, like, extra cozy.
The microphone?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Let's summarize this bitch.
Lindsay Rogers, played by Eloise Mumford. Not related to Mumford and Sons,
I was really hoping you left that in because she was related, but you know. Mm.
She's a professor at a small university somewhere in Washington State. We learn very late in the movie that they're in Washington State.
I wrote it down very early. Where are they?
I kept writing down where are they because they kept talking about how Connecticut was very far. And I was like,
But where?
But where are you? Very late in the movie, her dean calls her and is like, I needed to use your emergency contacts in Washington State.
There was also a license plate that said Washington State at some point.
Great.
And because I was so frustrated by not knowing where they were, I was looking carefully to find out.
They're in Washington State. I'm telling you this, listeners, very early on. That's where she is. Small university, somewhere in Washington State. We meet her. She's wrapping up a very engaged class for the semester. And then she stops by to visit her boyfriend, Jason, at the coffee shop he owns. He asks her to a very fancy dinner that night. Next, she goes home where she lives with her mother. And her grandfather, Grandpa Bob, played by time travel icon Christopher Lloyd.
What up, Doc?
He's also there, wrapping her presents in her house for some reason, even though he lives across the street. They all seem to have a picture-perfect relationship, but Lindsay laments that she doesn't make a lot of money and still has to live at home.
Before she leaves for her fancy dinner, Lindsay's mother tells her a woman named Stephanie Jackman left her a message. She calls Stephanie Jackman back on her way to dinner, and it turns out that Stephanie is a dean at Yale who wants to publish her thesis about living an inspired life and offer her a job as a tenure-track professor at Yale. Dean Jackman thinks they could even turn Lindsay's thesis into a best-selling book that would appeal to the masses. It seems like all of Lindsay's professional dreams are coming true.
When Lindsay arrives at the fancy dinner restaurant, it is closed for a special occasion, which, unshockingly, turns out to be a very cute proposal from Jason, complete with a fun and cheesy video about their love story. However, instead of the instant yes Jason is expecting, she hesitates, telling him about the offer she got, which would mean moving across the country. He seems confused and hurt, and mentions something about just re-signing his lease on the coffee shop here. He eventually leaves her with the ring and walks away. She goes to a nearby park very upset. While sitting on a bench there crying, a mysterious horse-drawn carriage appears from the fog, being driven by none other than William Shatner with a crazy long white goatee.
The casting in this movie, truly wild. William Shatner offers her a coach ride, and she weirdly agrees. They ride further into the park, where she eventually gets out and appears to witness the Northern Lights. When she turns around, William Shatner and his horse are gone. She walks back to where she left her car, and it's not there. Also, her cell phone no longer appears to be working. She hoofs it all the way back to town, where she sees two weird things. Her book, already fully published and displayed in a bookshop window, and Jason's coffee shop, but not in the place she remembered it being. She goes in and talks to one of his employees, Becca, who seems very weirded out by her being there and asking all these questions. She then continues her very long on-foot journey all the way back to her and her mother's house, but it is all dark and boarded up. Eventually, her grandfather hears her yelling and comes out from across the street.
When she goes into her grandfather's house, we finally get the moment we've all been waiting for. He reveals it's been 3 years since the night she got the job and Jason proposed. He jokingly suggests that she time travel 3 years into the future, but she thinks some sort of short-term amnesia is more likely. He also reveals that her mother is fine, but off in Switzerland with her new husband. She had a heart attack a few years ago and then fell in love with the heart doctor who helped her get better.
I want to see that movie. The next day, Grandpa Bob and Lindsay go to a doctor who does all the tests and tells her there's no trauma or anything to explain the amnesia from a physical perspective, so it must be psychological. Or, you know, time travel. Later that day, Lindsay gets a call through her grandfather's landline from Dean Jackman, who is understandably very annoyed that she could not reach her in the middle of what is supposed to be her book tour. She also reveals Lindsay is making millions in royalties, and since Lindsay is back in Washington anyway, she's going to set up a book signing in Seattle for the next day. She will send her clothes and a car.
Meanwhile, Lindsay has learned through Grandpa Bob that Jason is actually engaged again to Becca, his coffee shop employee. Lindsay and Jason have also had a weird interaction in town that has led Becca to very maturely be like, "Hey Jason, go talk to her and get some closure before we get married later this week." When Jason goes to try to talk to Lindsay the next day, she is about to get in the car to Seattle, so naturally she invites him to go with her, and naturally he accepts.
As one does. At the Seattle bookstore, Lindsay is very nervous about the Q&A before the signing, and Jason reenacts lines from their sixth grade performance of The Wizard of Oz to make her feel better. Then he asks a question during the Q&A that makes her look good. They seem to be having a really great time together. There's also some talk before and after about how he wishes that she would have asked him to go with her all those years ago. And she says she wishes she could do it all differently. And they have a few almost moments, but eventually they return back to their hometown and go their separate ways.
Lindsay flies home to New Haven and has a huge fancy house and does a television interview and goes to a fancy party, but seems sad and lonely. After a call with her mom and her mom's new husband over in Switzerland, she decides to fly back to Washington and try to win Jason back. But by the time she gets there, it's too late. Jason and Becca are married and off on their honeymoon. I will just say for the record, this is where we get the montage of her and Jason's moments together set to Espresso Kiss.
Espresso Kiss.
Espresso Kiss. Once again, she cries on a park bench. Luckily, once again, William Shatner and his terrible goatee and his weird horse and carriage show up to give her a ride. The Northern Lights appear again, she gets out to look at them, and once again, William Shatner and his horse disappear.
She runs back to the parking lot, and this time, her car from 3 years ago is there. She made it back to the past. She immediately drives back to Jason's coffee shop with all of the chefs from the fancy restaurant in tow and asks him to go with her to New Haven and get married. He accepts, they get engaged, and presumably live happily ever after. The end.
This brings us to...
Blast from the Past!
So this is Christopher Lloyd's third time on the pod.
It's also his third time not responding to our request to be on the pod, so.
Is he even, like, still alive?
I think he is, yeah.
Okay. I guess he was in a movie last year, yeah, so.
I think we would have heard a lot if he had died.
We'll do a special episode when he dies.
I mean, yeah, we'll have to do,
okay, like, he's younger than William Shatner. He's fine. He's 84.
How old is William Shatner?
91.
What?
Yeah.
That guy is 91?
Yeah, I looked it up when I was researching
this. Holy shit, I did not realize he was that old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. I will just say, Christopher Lloyd, 84, got married 6 years ago.
Good for him.
Always time, you know?
Late in life love, you know?
How old do you think
she
is?
How old is she? She's got to be...
52.
Oh, man.
I mean...
At least she's not like 25, in her
20s. But...
She's also 30 years younger than him.
When he was 52, she was 22. So...
I mean, she looks great. For 52. She looks super hot, so.
How many times do you think he was married?
I'm going to say 3.
5.
5. Wow.
Okay, so Christopher Lloyd's been married 5 times. Okay, I don't know if there's anything there.
Yeah.
We're moving on. Bet he wishes he could go back in time and undo some of those.
Hey, that's a good one.
Anyway, Christopher Lloyd, as I'm sure you know, is most known for being Doc in Back to the Future movies. So he has been on this podcast both for being in Back to the Future Part 3, which is the only Back to the Future that fits in to our romance-driven plot of this movie. And also for one of our Christmas time travel movies last year with the train that was called...
Next Stop Christmas.
It was.
Was that what it was called?
Next Stop Christmas. Yes. Anyway, yeah, so he's been, this is his third time on the pod, and he's been in at least 6 time travel movies that we know of. So, I think he can be like a prince on Rachel McAdams' court.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I just wanted to acknowledge him.
We acknowledge.
We acknowledge you. We see you, Christopher Lloyd. You are witnessed. Also, William Shatner and Christopher Lloyd have appeared on screen together in both Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, in 1984, and a movie called Senior Moment from 2017.
That sounds bad.
I'm sure it is. Let's see.
Is Robert De Niro also in it, playing a dirty grandpa?
Is Zac Efron for some reason also in it? Sorry. So the movie Senior Moment is actually from 2021. IMDb got their facts wrong.
Oh, Gene Smart's in it.
It stars William Shatner, Gene Smart, and Christopher Lloyd. After drag racing his vintage convertible around Palm Springs, a retired NASA pilot loses his license. Forced to take public transportation, he meets Caroline and learns to navigate love and life again. So it seems that, like, William Shatner and Gene Smart are falling in love, and Christopher Lloyd is William Shatner's best friend.
Wow. I mean, presumably William Shatner made this when he was, like, 90 or 89. That's crazy. Yeah. Honestly, good for him. Still working.
Yeah.
We stand.
What do you think this movie has on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, no. Not a good rating.
21%.
Oh, no.
Also, being a woman in Hollywood, right? It's like, Gene Smart, still too young for William Shatner.
Yep.
By 20 years. Gene Smart is only 71. She should not have to be falling in love with William Shatner. But whatever. Okay. Moving on. Oh, and then I was just going to talk about how William Shatner was actually 91, which is wild. And also, he went to space in 2021. And
oh, that's nice.
Is the oldest person to ever do so.
Okay.
Because he was 90.
Did he do that with, like, Jeff Bezos or something? Or Elon Musk?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he did it with necessarily one of them. He flew on a Blue Origin suborbital capsule.
Okay.
So it's like he wasn't an astronaut. But I don't know if he was with other rich people.
I mean, one would assume.
Yeah. Also, fun fact, the actor and actress that played the limousine driver and Dean Jackman were brother and sister.
Oh, all right. Great.
Which means that they cast Dean Jackman, and then she was like, Can my brother be the
limo
driver?
Can my brother be the limo driver?
Who has two lines.
Or they filmed it in British Columbia, and there are, like, 17 actors in British Columbia, and they were like...
Yes. It does seem like it was filmed in British Columbia.
It was definitely filmed in British Columbia.
The reason that I put Eloise Mumford's name in there, she's not related to the Mumford & Sons people, unfortunately, but she is a graduate from our alma mater.
Ah!
She graduated from Tisch in 2009.
Wow. Good for her.
Only very shortly before we got there.
Yeah.
She was in Atlantic, if you were curious.
That's great. She was perfectly adequate.
Yes, she was good. And she was very cute.
She was very cute. Yeah.
And she's probably...
I was rooting for her.
And she's probably best well known. I have not seen any of these movies, but she has a very big part in all of the 50 Shades movies.
Oh.
She's the main lady's roommate.
Oh, okay. I haven't seen any of them, so would not know. But
yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah, so she's working.
She booked...
Still don't think Tish is worth it, but she's working. Just want to throw that in there.
Hot take.
Okay, that's it.
All right,
you have any other questions for me?
No.
Okay.
Magic, science, just a dream.
So here's where we talk about the hows and the whys of the time travel. As with most of our movies around this time of year, this is some good old-fashioned Christmas magic.
Christmas magic. Horse magic?
William Shatner in the world's worst goatee magic?
Is it suggested that he's Santa Claus?
I hope not. They would have given him a full beard if he was Santa Claus, right?
Maybe, but I feel like they were doing, like, a Santa Claus adjacent thing. Because he had, like, the white goatee and also was, like, you know, driving kind of a sleigh type vehicle. Sure. And it's Christmas.
Sure. I think he can be Santa adjacent without being Santa.
Maybe he's like Santa Claus's brother, George.
I think he had a name.
Did he?
I just called him William Shatner, but if you look on IMDb credits for this movie.
I don't think they ever say his name. I don't think he ever says what his name is.
Nick. His name is Nick the...
Nick the coachman.
Okay, he is Santa.
He's
then.
Santa. I was right. Okay, yeah.
God.
He's Santa, like...
Why did they give him a better beard then?
I mean, I think they wanted to be like, it's Santa, but with a twist.
It's Santa, but also William Shatner.
Don't forget it's William Shatner. We're not going to cover him all the way up. We paid a lot of money for this guy.
Real question. Do you think Christopher Lloyd was, like, a little annoyed when they got William Shatner?
That was my question, is, like, the casting choice to make Christopher Lloyd the grandpa and William Shatner the time travel guy. I was surprised. It felt like, I mean, ultimately, it didn't feel like a miscast because I think that, like, Christopher Lloyd's energy was, like, wrong for, like, the...
Is William Shatner a good actor?
I think William Shatner is, like, George Clooney. In that he just does what he does.
I think George Clooney is a better actor than William Shatner.
Anything past, like, I would say 2016, George Clooney has not been acting. He just shows up.
Sure, but that was only 6 years ago. He did so many things before 2016.
Yeah, but, like, William Shatner's the same way. Like, I'm sure, he did stuff earlier in his career where he was acting, and then, like, now he's like, I just show up and I'm William Shatner and just sort of chill.
I mean, his peak was Miss Congeniality, let's be real.
I mean, I think a lot of Star Trek fans would take some issue with that.
Come at me, Star Trek fans. His peak was Miss Congeniality.
I mean, he was great in that, but what I'm saying is, like, eventually he just was like, I don't know.
Right, okay, I think by the time we're doing this movie in 2015, Christopher Lloyd is still trying a little harder.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd's trying harder, and he does have more lines in the movie, and...
For sure, by a long shot. Yeah. He has to stand.
He definitely did more than one day on set. William Shatner did one single day on set.
Yes, and sat the entire time.
Yeah.
Because he was... 85.
Yeah, well, wouldn't you?
Would love to get to the point in my career where people just wheel me places. And...
Wow, yeah. Do you think he had to learn how to drive a carriage?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
There was a man in there doing all the work.
There's a little man inside.
Yeah, and by inside, I don't mean in the carriage, I mean in the horse.
That would be incredible. Okay, but back to the time travel mechanics. Oh, do we think that it's the... horse ride itself or the Northern Lights thing?
Oh, by the way, I did look it up if you can see the Northern Lights from Washington State.
Can you?
Sometimes.
Okay.
not like in Seattle, like in the rural town that they're in.
You could,
if you're far, if you're like far enough north in Washington State, in a rural town, some years, sometimes.
Okay.
So.
Thank you. That's a satisfying answer.
Yes.
But does that suggest that it's just a coincidence that they're in Northern Lights, or are the Northern Lights the magic?
I think Hallmark would bristle at the fact that we call this anything but Christmas magic.
Okay, fair enough.
I think the Northern Lights are
part of the Christmas magic.
Especially because at the end, just in case we didn't like get it, at the end her mom says, "Impossible, honey. Look around you. Now is the time of year for the impossible to become possible. It's Christmas. Magic is in the air."
And then she breaks into Impossible from
Impossible.
Yeah. Whitney Houston just appears.
If only.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right. But I just would like to know, we can say it's all Christmas magic. But is it the horse ride itself, the carriage ride itself, or is it, are the Northern Lights the thing that's doing it?
No, I think Santa is doing it. And I think maybe Santa is given a little bit of extra power from the Northern Lights because he's from the North Pole.
I love that. I love that explanation. I think we've solved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am glad that Christopher Lloyd did get to suggest that it was time travel. I feel like they gave that to him because he didn't get to be the time travel guy.
Agreed.
I was also glad that her mom was not dead because they did make it seem for a second like her mom was dead.
They did. I was honestly shocked and very upset. And it was also like, this is a bullshit thing to put on her for going to Yale. Like,
right.
She went to Yale and now her mom's dead.
I was also confused by why. Okay, so just... If, you know, we said in the summary, but basically, like, it seems like her mom is dead because her house is all boarded up. She goes into her grandfather's house, and her grandfather says something like, "You don't remember about your mom's heart attack?" And then she, like, gets really sad. She's like, "I can't believe mom's dead." And then Christopher Lloyd's like, "Oh, no, she's not dead. She had the heart attack. She met this great Stefan." Stefan. We'll get into an awful comment made about him in our feminism section. And they moved to Switzerland together. I'm sort of like... Why? Did they cast the mom and then she had a scheduling conflict? Why did they send her to Switzerland?
Was it just so that
Christopher Lloyd could be in more, a bigger part of her journey?
I think maybe, yeah. And I think also, well, okay, there was one thing. There was a line she had in the beginning of the movie before she time travels about how, like, she wants her mom to get out there and, like, find someone.
Yeah, but she could have found someone and still have been in town.
I guess so, but I think... I actually thought it was kind of nice because it was like, look, time's moving on. There is like a lot of changes that have happened in 3 years and like it is what it is. And your mom is happy and living in Sweden. So like
Switzerland,
whatever.
I actually don't remember.
It might have been Sweden. I think it's Sweden because
you're not going to be able to find it.
No,
how would you know? You took notes.
I took notes. No, but I said,
specifically.
I wrote, go to Stockholm, bitch.
Oh,
I wrote that.
I thought it was weird that it's still like they have phones in Stockholm or wherever she is. I thought it was weird that it took their days to be able to contact her mother.
100%. I have a note about that.
Okay, sorry. We're getting ahead of ourselves as we do.
All I want to say is that I wrote go to Stockholm, bitch, because she was so mystified about what to do for Christmas. And I was like, go to Sweden. You have the money. Go see your mom, you weirdo.
Yeah, or go back home as you end up doing and spend the day with your... Like, you have the kind of money where you could fly home just for the day on Christmas and then go back to your book
and not blink an eye.
And go spend time with Grandpa Bob.
Stupid. Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah.
What have you done?
So here's where you talk about the inconsistencies, plot holes, any other time travel potpourri. If we're going in chronological order, let's start with how the first scene, she's teaching this class, and
oh my god.
She's like, and the class, unfortunately, it's over, and the whole class is like, what? No.
Oh. The class seems surprised yes. that it's over, which I was like, oh, what? Why are you surprised?
Yes, I loved that the class is not only, like, upset, but surprised.
They're obsessed with her and also shocked that the semester is ended.
None of them have made any plans to, like, take their finals or go home for the holidays.
They just thought this class would keep going forever, honestly.
They haven't looked at the syllabus one time.
That's the seductive power of inspired thinking, honestly.
Okay, while we're talking about this, not chronological order, I guess, but, like, what is her thesis?
I don't know, and I fucking loved it. It was one of my favorite parts of the movie. She appears to be, like, a mental health grifter.
Yes.
Like, I'm pretty sure that's the path she was going down, and at a certain point, I honestly thought that a good twist for the movie would have been that, like, she did get to go to Yale. Yes, she has the career she's always wanted, but, like, they changed her thesis when she wrote the book, and it is saying something completely different mm-hmm. from what she had intended it to say at the beginning.
Right. But that doesn't seem to be what happened.
That's not what happened.
Like, it seems like they didn't change anything about her thesis other than the title. They shortened it to just inspired because it was some academic long thing.
Right. But her thesis does not, even with the long title, it does not sound like anything academic at all.
No.
Like, it's basically, she's like, the power of positive thinking and, like, right. living a nice life.
She says things like, there's no higher peak than self-enlightenment, or an inspired life starts with being truthful to yourself.
She also calls, she says she would consider her father what she would term a compassionate empath. Which doesn't mean anything.
I don't even know, is she a professor of philosophy?
Well, at first
psychology?
I was
psychology?
Like, this is what I was so confused about, because I think later in the movie they say something about her being a professor of psychology, but in her class she's like mostly citing philosophers
yeah.
in that first, like, the first opening sentence or whatever. And so I was like, mm-hmm. oh, she must be a philosophy professor.
Yeah, she's citing, I didn't write it down, but there's something vaguely related to, like, a hierarchy of needs. Yes?
Yes, which I guess could be psychology, but then she also talks about, like, Sartre, I think?
Yeah, like, definitely Sartre is mentioned.
Yeah, and I was like, wait, that's not psychology, that's philosophy.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was a mess. It was a big fucking mess. Very vague. I loved it.
It was just whatever. It was like her thesis was whatever you could put on the kind of magnet you would get your mom at Home Goods.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. That's her thesis.
I'm glad it was. Of course, it was a bestseller because
people love vague shit.
Yes, but also it never would have passed her actual, like, defense in a PhD program.
Right, because
program.
It literally didn't mean anything. And there's no way it could be based on any kind of research.
Right.
At all.
Yes. There's a reason that actual PhD theses don't get published as is.
As self-help books.
And have mass appeal.
Can you imagine?
Yeah, I mean, as somebody who is married to somebody who is working on a dissertation, would love if it translated
yeah,
into
that'd be incredible.
Millions of dollars of royalties.
I don't think that's going to happen, though. And also, like, if Liam's thesis turned into a self-help book.
I don't care. Give me the money.
I just think that would be a really interesting twist.
Yeah. I'll do the Q&As for you.
For all of us.
I'm just going to highlight again, why is Grandpa Bob wrapping the presents in the house of the people he's giving the presents to instead of his own home when he has a different home?
Because they needed him to be in the same place and also for her to get that ugly ass dress.
Yes. I mean, I don't know if this is consistency or feminism. She was so into this dress that she asked for.
It was
so ugly.
It was so ugly. She looked like Madeline. Mm-hmm. It was awful.
It was just like a navy dress. An A-line navy dress that you'd maybe wear to the office, not to, like, a romantic dinner. Except the collar, there was, like, a big collar that was
big white collar.
Pearls.
Horrible. Makes my skin crawl, honestly. This movie was made in 2015, right? Mm-hmm. It had very 2012, 2010 kind of mm-hmm. vibe to me.
Yeah.
Style-wise.
Not a single skinny jean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and as we know, I've talked about before, I missed the age of the skinny jean.
Maybe this was filmed, like, a little earlier.
Maybe.
And they just held on to it for some reason. Because, I don't know.
They had too many time travel romance movies
maybe.
That year or something.
Or maybe William Shatner and Christopher Lloyd were fighting over who got top billing.
Possible.
That's why.
I'm surprised neither of them appears on the poster, to be honest.
I am too. Yeah. I mean, I would think that would be a big draw. But no. Okay, so I am also a little confused by Jason's proposal. Because if she's this close with her mom and her grandpa, like, not that he needs to ask permission, but it feels weird that he, like, didn't tell them that he was going to propose on this night and didn't make sure that she had cleared her schedule and, like, get her mom in on it. Be like, make sure that she doesn't plan anything for this night because this is when I'm going to propose to her.
I thought that he maybe did.
Oh. No, because the mom was so surprised when she was like, maybe he's going to propose tonight. Like, she was, like, excited. She seemed excited and genuinely surprised.
I thought there was, like, a note. Maybe this is just, I was just reading into it. I thought because when she was like, Mom, I can't go to the soup kitchen with you. Mom was like, oh, yeah, no problem. And then was like, oh, Gino's, huh? In a way that was sort of like, I know something you don't.
Oh, see, I disagree with that. I think she was genuinely like, oh my God, is, like, tonight the night? Like, it's actually going to happen? And I was like, Jason.
So I think.
Talk to her mom. Make sure that she gets out of the soup kitchen thing.
But maybe he had talked to her. Because a lot of the times what happens, or what, you know, anecdotally, what has happened a lot of the time is, like, people have talked and been like, do I have your blessing? I'm going to propose. Or previous guest of the pod, Christine, has had this happen to her a few times where, like, someone has talked to her because they wanted to consult with her on rings or whatever and been like, I am going to propose. And then it's been, like, months and months of her just having to, like, keep a secret and wait. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it felt like he had maybe talked to her mom and her mom knew a proposal was coming, just didn't know exactly when.
I just think it's poor planning. Like, I really think he should have, like, checked in with them because it seems like not really fair for him to just, like, swoop in and take her soup kitchen shift away.
Sure. I just also think that he clearly put a lot of work into it, even in the movie and whatever. I think emotions are high. He probably isn't thinking super clearly. There's a lot of things going on.
So you have He's a lot juggling. Of, what you're saying is you have a lot of grace for Jason.
I do. I thought, as far as proposals we've seen in these movies, I thought this was one of the least cringy.
Yeah.
And most, like, cute.
This is a proposal I would want.
Right.
Like, this was a very sweet proposal.
It was sweet and funny. It didn't take itself too seriously. And I really thought it was a nice proposal. So I do give Jason grace.
Okay, fair enough. I thought the proposal itself was great. I really liked it. For future reference, please watch this movie before you propose to me. Also, one thing that I like is that had it all worked out correctly, he proposed to her before dinner. So they didn't have to, like, go through the whole dinner with this, like, weird anticipation and, like, weird energy of, like, and is something going to happen?
Being alone in the restaurant.
Like, they don't have to wait all the way until dessert, you know? And he was just like, this is what this is. I'm proposing to you tonight. And then we can spend the whole dinner celebrating. Mm-hmm. I appreciated that.
Speaking of the wedding stuff, couple things. When he's planning a wedding with Becca in the 3 years future, that is happening.
Yes.
In,
mm-hmm.
He throws out there, just as like a maybe suggestion, that they change the venue.
At the last minute.
Days before the wedding. And then seems surprised when she's like, that would be difficult. It's just like, there's no grace there. I'm like, my dude.
Honestly, it seems like Jason had a really hard 3 years.
Yes.
Like, the 3 years have not been kind to him. He's had a bad time. He's not really on top of his shit. Like, poor Becca. I'm glad that
In some ways he is. He's just he opened two new locations of his coffee shop.
I know, but, like, romantically, he is not on top of his shit. Sure. He had a lot of trouble getting over this thing, which makes sense because he was trying to propose to this person who ended up leaving him. And then now he's, like, not really in it to win it with Becca. It's just the truth.
Yeah, maybe he should have waited to propose to her. But regardless, he is a human being and is functional enough to know that you cannot just change wedding venues.
One would
minutes
think.
Minutes before.
One would think.
And then I was very confused where at the very end of the movie we see in the now, you know, realigned, correct future, we see Jason and Lindsay getting married. And it seems like at first, because we see their wedding in a church and then they come out and I'm like, oh, are they just not having a reception? Because she, like, throws the bouquet in this church parking lot. and is, like, saying these intense farewells to people, and then is like, okay, see you at Gino's. And I'm like, wait, so you are having a reception? Why did you just do all those things? I'm so confused.
It's a really good question. I have no answer. I have no answer.
My last consistency issue is, I don't care if it was the most meaningful play and it was the moment he fell in love with Lindsay. There is no way in hell that Jason in his early 30s, late 20s, early 30s, remembers the lines from his sixth grade play. No way in hell.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. He, like, knew it down to a T and was performing it as if it was yesterday.
Yeah. As somebody who has a great memory.
It's true, you do.
Great memory for monologues. Yeah. Great memory for lines. No way in hell he remembers lines from his sixth grade play.
Yeah, no. I agree with that. My last thing is I want to just put in another plug for the fact that if a friend comes to you and they say that they have amnesia or some sort of event that is happening, don't tell them that what they should do is take a rest and go to sleep, because that's what Lindsay's grandpa does when she's like, hey, I don't remember the last 3 years all of a sudden. And he's like, maybe you should just, like, take a nap or, like, go to bed and we'll get you checked out in the morning. No. Bad. Do not let her sleep. So even if it turns out to be time travel, just maybe, like, first line of defense, go to the emergency room. Mm-hmm. We can deal with it if it's time travel later, but make sure it's not a concussion because you could die.
Yeah. That's a great plug. Thank you, Helena.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Helena.
Head injuries are serious. This is my PSA.
Helena knows.
I have had a concussion before, and it was serious. I was not myself.
She has not slept since.
I have not slept a wink. I also wanted to say I'm confused about who, like, what the dean's job is, because it's interesting that she's the dean of the School of Psychology at Yale, but she is also acting seemingly as Lindsay's agent.
Publicity manager.
Publicity manager, book tour manager. Like, she has all the jobs.
Yeah.
I feel really bad for her. I don't know why she's this involved.
I'm hoping that, like, there is a different, like, book tour manager / publisher who just, like, couldn't reach Lindsay and was like, Dean Jackman, do you have any other emergency contacts?
It really seems like Dean Jackman is the one who's doing all the organizing, but
right.
Sure.
The fact that she was like, oh, but can you go to this book signing in Seattle? Doesn't bode well.
Not great.
Okay.
Shall we?
Does their love stand the test of time?
So here's your talk about the romance of it all. We already discussed the proposal, which is better than most proposals we've seen. Funny and cute. I will say generally they were both funny and cute.
Yeah, I liked them. I thought they were cute together. I can't say that I was exactly rooting for their relationship because, I don't know, kind of seemed like she had a pretty good life without him.
Yeah. Okay, here's my issue with this. Obviously, she's very much in love with him. They are in a serious enough relationship where it would make sense that they would get engaged. Obviously, she's not going to get over him literally overnight.
Right. Of course not.
So, like, it doesn't convince me that she would never get over him or she would not have gotten over him if actual 3 years had passed just because she couldn't get over him overnight. Right. It makes sense to me that if he actually went through 3 years, he is farther along in his life or in his getting over her path than she is.
I mean, he's not, though, is the thing.
Sure.
Like, he is engaged and about to be married, but he's not over her, very clearly.
But he did marry Becca.
He did end up marrying Becca. It's true. However.
And, like, you can be not. Okay. We've talked about this before. You get to choose. You get to choose who you want to
be in love with.
Yeah. And spend your life with. And invest your time and energy into.
Right. You can be very in love with someone and have it not be right. Or
right.
Have it not be the right timing or any number of things.
Sure.
That mean that you're not together.
I think we've all had feelings for people that, like, we know are bad or, like, are not going to end well. So we just don't invest ourself or our time into those feelings. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we should have been with that person.
Right.
So I'm just saying that it doesn't convince me that they're meant to be together because
she's not over him. She's not over him. The second she wakes up 3 years later. The second
she wakes up, because it hasn't actually been 3 years. I would be much more interested to see if all of these things had actually happened and 3 years had actually passed, if she regretted her choices. If we actually saw her interact with the friends and the life that she had an actual emotional connection to in New Haven.
Yeah.
But obviously she didn't have any of those real feelings for the life that she'd created there because of the time travel.
Right. That was definitely a missing piece for me too. And I was just mad because I was like, I really think that you have probably grown so, like, she has probably grown so much during that time. Mm-hmm. And it seems like also what we learn about Jason's reaction to her getting this job and her moving does not, like, speak that well of him.
Right.
Like, his reaction did not make me feel like, okay, like, this was a huge mistake. Like, his reaction made me feel like maybe they outgrew each other in this scenario, and, like, that was okay.
Mm-hmm. Especially because we had just learned that they grew up together.
Yeah.
That was, as soon as he was like, I've been in love with you since we were 11.
Hallmark is always trying to be like, isn't this the most romantic thing? And I'm like, not really.
Yeah.
Not always.
It's funny, because Hallmark is like, ultimate green flag, you've known each other since middle school. And I'm like,
is it? Red flag?
It's great when it works out, but it's not, to me, I'm always like, okay, how much of this is love and we are right for each other right now, and how much of this is like nostalgia or like comfort?
Well, in their case, it really felt like that within this scenario, because I was like, yeah, she moved to New Haven. She's starting this brand new career, or not brand new career, but like this huge step in her career. And clearly, like, the way that he acted was not supportive. Like, it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, have these people never heard of a long distance relationship?
Well,
it just didn't even seem. I understand that, like, she sort of made the mistake of not saying, I want you to come with me. And he needed to hear that from her. And that's the kind of ways that, like, people miss each other sometimes, which sucks, but, like, happens. But also, it seems like he went and visited her and was, like, real pouty about it. And, like,
it was like, you have bought plants.
You bought plants. And it's like, well, yeah, because I fucking live here now. Like, I don't know. And also, like, I don't know. I just feel like he... The other thing is, like, if you want to go with someone somewhere and find out if they want you to be with them in a big next step of their life, like, just ask them.
Yeah,
she probably didn't think it was an option because of the way that his coffee shop worked, which is stupid on her part.
Well, he literally, one of his first reactions to her was to say, I just renewed my lease on the coffee shop.
Right.
And our life is here. So, like, I understand why she would not interpret that as him wanting her to ask him to move.
Right, but also, like, did they not have subsequent conversations is my question. Like, they never spoke again after that?
Well,
like,
clearly not, because he went to visit her.
No, but, like, their engagement happened. It went really badly. He said the wrong thing. She said the wrong thing. Like, they parted ways that night, right?
Well, okay.
And then what happened? Then did they just, like, she packed up her stuff and left and, like, didn't say anything to him? Like, have another conversation. You've been with this person a long time. It was very frustrating to me.
Yeah, I mean, also, like, the conversations that they had when they were coming back from Seattle or whatever, again, felt like he was sort of rewriting their past to fit his narrative,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, the thing, because, like I said, his reaction to her was to talk about how he just renewed his lease on the coffee shop, their life was here. He said to her, what about us? She said, there still can be an us, and he said, in Connecticut, as if that was a bad thing. Like,
yeah. Well, and, like, you're allowed to have, like, a bad reaction in the moment. Like, if that's what happens.
Especially when you've built up this proposal in your head, and now, instead of saying yes, she runs out of the restaurant.
Totally. Like, bad scenario for him, and having a bad reaction makes sense. But also, like, what you do after that also is important, and we didn't get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And from everything that, all the evidence, it just seems like what he did after that was, like, be a little pouty bitch baby.
Yeah.
And not come up with solutions.
I also didn't love when they're talking about it later, 3 years later, and she says something like, I had just been offered the chance of a lifetime. He said, I had hoped that I was going to be the chance of a lifetime for you.
Hated that. I was like, shut it down. Wrap this movie up. We're done.
And I also felt bad for him the other way too, right? Like, he's talking a lot in this movie, especially they have a scene right after they get back from Seattle in his coffee shop where he's talking about how much he loves it here and his coffee shop and all the regulars. And so, like, when 3 years in the past, she does ask him to move with her and he does say yes, which, you know, validates his the narrative that he says 3 years later that he would have gone with her if she'd asked, which I guess he did because we see it happen. But,
yeah,
like, this doesn't really fit how he was acting an hour ago, but okay. I also feel bad for him. Like, he clearly, the town, having the coffee shop in that town means something to him.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, look, sometimes you're with someone and, again, like, for reasons that make sense with other parts of your life, you don't end up with them, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes things don't work out. I don't know. I just, I feel like these two people, maybe just their lives were not compatible. I mean, maybe in the, you know, revised future, they figured it out, and I'm happy for them if they did.
Yeah, I hope they did.
But, like, it's okay if you have one dream and the person that you're with has a different dream, and that means that, like, you're not together anymore. That's a thing that just happens. It's happened to me.
Yeah.
And I'm a lot better off for it. Like, I couldn't help but, like, you know, be writing my own story onto this and be like, this kind of has happened to me in, like, a smaller scale way that didn't involve moving across the country, but, like, involved choosing between career and love. And I wasn't willing to compromise, and I'm glad I didn't, because I like the person I am now, and I would not have had all that growth had I not decided, made the decisions that I made.
And I will say also, like, these decisions are not once-in-a-lifetime decisions, right? Like, these kinds of decisions.
That's so true.
These happen, you know, sometimes on a smaller scale, but these decisions are constantly happening. I'm constantly, like, navigating this in my own relationship, every new step of our different professional journeys and our different personal journeys, and every time we have to sign a lease or move or, like, just, you know, decide if we want to stay in this city or what our next job is going to be, whatever. So it's like, you need to, how you are able to evaluate these decisions with your partner is also, like, very important, and they did not do a great job. So
they did a bad job at it, which is why I'm like, maybe they're not meant to be together. Yeah, exactly. You can make a lot of stuff work if you have the communication skills and the wherewithal to do it and the flexibility, but, like, sometimes you don't, and that's fine.
And I also worry that, like, Jason has clearly been in love with her since, he says in the video, he's been in love with her since they were 11. She did not return those feelings until she got back from college. I'm very worried that this is a one-sided relationship where he will end up doing whatever she wants because she is something that he found unattainable for a very long time. And
I think that's definitely possible.
We are now writing so much onto this Hallmark movie.
We really are. Yeah. No, you're right.
You know, I hope he found some regulars at a coffee shop in New Haven and they got a couples therapist and they're doing great. And then, I think their love will stand the test of time because it's Hallmark and people don't get divorced in Hallmark movies.
Yeah, and they also do have, like, nice chemistry and seem to like each other for reasons that are not just, like, we're the two Hallmark leads.
Yes, they had great banter. They had great banter and they were fun to watch together and laughed and looked at each other lovingly and had beautiful espresso kisses.
They had so many great espresso kisses.
And really, really gross coffee pun vows.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I actually wanted to ask you, perfectly perfect in every way, but he makes a coffee pun in his vows. Do you leave him at the altar? Because I think I would.
If he's perfectly perfect, I don't know if we've played perfectly perfect on this pod before. So, like, perfectly perfect means, like, he is ideal for you in every single other way, except for this one thing. I think I will get through it. Especially if it's just in that one moment, right? Like, 10 minutes, vows are 10 minutes. They don't mean anything, as we've talked about this week. sidebar, yes. My spouse right now has COVID, and I have been completely quarantining from them because I don't want COVID. So I texted Helena to ask if I had vowed. Helena was my wedding officiant, if we have not gone over that. I had texted Helena to ask if I had vowed in sickness and in health to them, because I am not, I'm taking, they're fine. I'm providing food for them and they're fine, but I'm not taking as good of a job as I would be if I was willing to get COVID. And Helena reminded me that apparently I specifically asked her to cut out the part where I vowed to be with them in sickness and in health. So
That's what you asked me. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. I only said the things you told me to say. So
I believe in setting really firm personal boundaries, and I don't think wedding vows should cross those personal boundaries. So
well, my personal boundary is no fucking coffee puns. If you say you're the perk in my percolator, we're done. It's over. It's fucking over.
You know what really bothered me is they weren't even good coffee puns, right? Because, like, he said the perk in my percolator, and at least that is sort of, like, okay, a little clever. But then he said the caffeine in my coffee, and that's nothing. That's not right. A pun.
You're not, like, there was no parallel structure. Yeah. Like, or he was trying so hard for the parallel structure that he lost the plot. It was terrible.
So I would say if you own a coffee shop and we have beautiful espresso kisses, you can put coffee puns in our vows as long as they are clever.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. That's fair. That is a good distinction. If they are good coffee puns. And also, like, if you're the kind of person who does puns and is good at them.
Yeah.
Also, he never made another pun throughout the entire thing. So I was so shocked by this, like, really weird, like, thing that he did. If he had been, like, a corny pun guy the whole time, I'd be like, aw, he's doing his corny pun thing. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's just like, why are you doing that? That's so weird.
Yeah. That's true. I would have come up with better puns.
Yeah, you sure would have. I believe it. Do it now.
I'm trying. The...
You really grind my beans, baby.
Yeah, there you go. That's better. I can't espresso how much I love you. No, that's bad.
Terrible.
It's because I don't drink coffee anymore. That's the issue.
You mocha my heart flutter.
No, that's worse than mine. And you do drink coffee, so what's your excuse?
I did at least one good one, so.
I been thinking about you.
Terrible, terrible. No.
Okay, I think we need to move on.
Yeah, we gotta go.
Ladies, did we just time travel back to the 1950s? Here's where we talk about all of our intersectional feminism woes. Can we start with Miss Jameson and how she really turned the whole moral of this movie on its head?
Yeah, talk to me about that.
Okay.
Tell listeners who Miss Jameson is.
Yeah, because I somehow managed to exclude her entirely from the narrative summary. So Miss Jameson is Lindsay and her mom's very crabby neighbor. She's just this old woman who is very mean to Lindsay in the beginning of the movie. Lindsay offers to, like, help her with her groceries or something. She's like, I got it. I'm not an invalid. You suck. And I don't think she says you suck, but that's the vibe.
That's the vibe. The vibe is you suck.
And then when she's time traveled into the future and she's having, like, a heart to heart with Grandpa Bob, Lindsay is like, oh, Grandpa Bob, can a person really have it all? And Grandpa Bob is like, well, I did. I had a beautiful wife, a wonderful daughter, a granddaughter I couldn't be more proud of. Which is, I'm like, what do you, that's not at all. That's
no,
like,
what's your career? That's a family life. She was saying, like, what right. about my career?
You had a nice family. Great. Whatever. And then he says, you don't want to end up like Mrs. Jameson, a person filled with regrets. And I'm like, oh, good. They're going to talk about how Miss Jameson didn't have a family because she's a terrible career woman.
Mm-hmm.
And then the story he tells about Mrs. Jameson is that she was a dancer when she was younger. And then she met Bill Jameson, fell in love, got married. He didn't want her working. So she stopped. And then he died when she was about 30. And it created a life of unhappiness and what ifs and what could have been. Because she gave up her life as a dancer.
Right.
And then I was like, well, now I'm confused about what the moral of this movie is.
Yeah, what do you want us to gather from this? I mean, to be fair, she would have probably been just about retired by the time she was 30 anyway. So, like...
Yeah, but maybe then by then she would have parlayed that into being, like, a choreographer or a dance teacher.
No, you're right. Honestly, what I took away from the Mrs. Jameson plotline was, like, you should just, like, leave that bitch alone. Like,
yeah. I will also say
they were, like, bothering her.
Then later, when Lindsay goes back to the past, she, like, is helping Miss Jameson with trying to help her with her trash cans again or whatever. Even though Miss Jameson is, again, like, I'm fine. Don't help me.
Please don't help me. I'm not interested in this relationship.
Lindsay's like, oh, they're doing the Nutcracker over at, I don't know, the Y.
Someplace.
Yeah. We should go. And then we see Miss Jameson in, like, the flash forward at the wedding. And she seems happy because Lindsay is...
Her friend now.
And they go to these... And first of all, I'm like, if I gave up my life as a dancer, probably the last thing I want to do is, like, go see a ballet.
And certainly the fucking Nutcracker. Let me tell you, if you were a dancer, you do that every year for your entire life. You don't want to see it. You're not. Well, and that's also, not the ballet you want to see. You don't give a shit about the Nutcracker anymore.
Well, and also, like, if I didn't want to give up my life as a ballerina and had to give it up, I don't want to go watch other people get to do that.
Yeah, for sure no. For sure no.
Whatever. Regardless, the bigger point here, though, is, like, the story that Grandpa Bob tells to Lindsay about Miss Jameson implies that Miss Jameson is full of regrets because she gave up her career for a man.
Right.
And up until this point, and also everything we know about every Hallmark movie we've ever seen, has led me to believe that the lesson that Lindsay is going to learn, and the lesson that Lindsay seems to learn, is that she shouldn't have given up Jason for her career.
Right.
And I mean, she ends up being able to, like, have Jason and her career, but, like, if push had come to shove, it seems like she would have picked Jason.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm sort of like, what is the lesson we're supposed to take from what Grandpa Bob tells us about Miss Jameson? Because the lesson I feel like we're supposed to take from it is, like, Lindsay, go the fuck back to New Haven and forget about Jason.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that. And maybe that is what Grandpa Bob was saying.
But Grandpa Bob had just been like, I had it all because I had a beautiful wife, a great daughter, and a great granddaughter.
Yeah. No, it's confusing. Maybe it's just, like, don't be a cranky old bitch. Like,
what it reeks to me of is, like, this movie had too many writers.
Yeah, you're probably right.
And they were fighting. There was, like, one angry feminist, and there was, like, one guy who writes all the Hallmark movies, and they were just fighting over drafts.
They just threw a bunch of shit in there, and they were like, I don't know. Yeah, honestly, it would have been a less confusing movie if you had just cut Miss Jameson out. Honestly, I thought that the movie, when we got, like, 3/4 of the way through, I was like, oh, is there not going to be, like, a different alternate future? Because I had really hoped that we would see, like, here's your future if you pick Yale. Here's your future if you pick Jason. And neither one is satisfying. And then she is like, what if I have both? What if I find a way to have both?
Yeah.
That would have been a far more satisfying movie. And I just like the message would have been a lot clearer. But instead it's like, by the end of the movie, I was left feeling like, she has a great life, but she's going to pick this man, and her life will probably, like, be less good.
Yeah. Or, like, now it will just be the same, but with Jason in it. And so it's like, what? It also feels,
it's going to be less good because at the Christmas Eve party that she has with her coworkers, they say that she has been fucking a French astrophysicist. So
they do? Did I miss that?
They were like, yeah, they were like, well, they don't say that she was fucking because it's Hallmark, but, like, her friend is like, or maybe it's the dean, is like, you have to tell Mary and Joseph about about the astrophysicist you met in Paris.
Okay,
her life is going to be better without this hometown guy. I'm so sorry. It's just the truth. Like,
here's the thing. I also don't understand why life couldn't have happened exactly like this, right? She didn't need this time travel. Like, let's say the time travel didn't happen. Life happens exactly like this. She and Jason break up. They have this weird time. He comes to New Haven with the plants. They break up. She's living her life. She gets to fuck some French astrophysicist. And then she goes home for Christmas in 3 years, and she misses Jason. And, I mean, maybe he's engaged. And, like, okay, I guess the worst part of this is that, like, Becca would probably get hurt. But, like, they still clearly could have gotten back together.
Right. I mean, he could have, like, started his coffee shop on, like, you know, it seems like his business is pretty much thriving where he is. Mm-hmm. So, like, just, you know,
franchise.
Franchise. Get people to run it while you're, you know, starting a new branch on the East Coast. I don't know.
And then they've both gotten to explore sort of their professional journeys separately and then come back together.
I don't know.
It just feels like, it feels like these movies always deploy time travel and, like, well, this person really needs the magic of Christmas time travel to help them. And it's like, I don't think she needed this.
No, what she needed is to fuck some astrophysicist.
What she needed to just, like, live her life. And if she comes back and still actually, with 3 years of distance, still loves this man, because this is fake 3 years of distance.
Fake 3 years of distance.
Which, like, is not fair to Lindsay. Like, I'm curious if with 3 years of distance, she still would have felt the same way. If anything, this feels like a present for Jason, right? Like, this is not a present for Lindsay. This is a present for Jason.
That's true.
Because Jason didn't get over her. She might have gotten over him.
I think she did. This is my theory, is that she did. And they're just like, Hallmark and this is feminism, Hallmark will not allow women to get over men.
Yes!
And sometimes women get over men.
Sometimes.
Actually, usually more quickly than the men get over the women.
Or just as, like, women are about to get over men, the men, like, text them.
Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway, I don't think Lindsay needed this time travel. I think she would have been fine.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think she should have just gone to Yale, and that should have been the end of that. Okay, feminism question?
Mm-hmm.
Is it a bad idea to get in a random man's horse-drawn carriage?
Yes.
What do we think of
that? I have that note, too. I say, don't get in this man's weird carriage in the middle of the night with no one around.
So we think that that's, like, a bad idea? Or, like, but it's, like, a horse-drawn carriage. So, like, do you think you could get abducted in a horse-drawn carriage?
Yes.
You do? Okay.
I think he could have taken her to a more secluded area.
And murdered her?
And murdered her.
Yeah, but, like, could she, like, duck and roll out of the carriage?
I mean, maybe, but there's no one around.
Yeah. It seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Stranger danger-wise, it's a no.
I think it's a bad idea to even just, like, sit on that bench while that man is there with no one around.
Yeah.
Right? No, like, I think the safest thing to do is to start walking away from that man.
Yeah. No, you're right. Also, that goatee is a red flag. So,
yeah,
don't talk to that guy. For feminism.
Yeah. I want to say, as soon as I heard that Jason was engaged, I knew it was Becca.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, obviously. I actually thought that maybe what would happen in the beginning, I thought maybe he was going to, like, take her to her favorite restaurant to, like, get her in a good mood and then dump her and tell her that he had been fucking Becca behind her back.
Wow.
I got all of that from, like, the one look that Becca, like, he and Becca shared.
Wow.
At the coffee shop.
Okay, do you think, like, maybe the actress who played Becca and the actor who played Jason were, like, fucking?
I mean, maybe. There was some stuff going on, for sure. Like, for me to, like, get all of that and then be like, oh, wait, no. It's...
I will say, in a feminism win for this movie, they did a really good job of making it so that it did not seem like Becca and Lindsay were, like, competing or,
agreed,
like, catfighting. Becca was very mature about the whole thing when Lindsay showed up. She said to Jason, like, you should talk to her. You should get closure. She was being very understanding.
Yeah, she was very nice. And I think they went out of their way to make sure that it was a conflict between Lindsay and Jason, not between Lindsay and Becca, which was cool.
And then at the end, they had some random dude for Becca to, like, eye fuck so that we could see that Becca would get somebody.
Yeah, nice. And also Lindsay gave Becca her, she didn't even throw the bouquet. She just, like, handed it to her, which was sweet.
Okay, we have another. We talked about this in It's Christmas Carol. We have another Christmas Eve party.
Yes! Why? Christmas Eve work party. Who is planning this?
Once again, if you live near any this isn't even like a big city, in New Haven. You live in near any metropolitan area, you have no family, and the only thing you have to do on Christmas Eve is go to a work party.
Go to a work party Christmas Eve. That's what you do. Very common. Everybody knows this.
Okay, a couple little things. I thought it wasn't great that they, at the book signing, there is a woman who comes up to...
Oh, yeah. I have this, too.
So a woman who comes up to Lindsay and is like, you are amazing. You changed my life. I dropped out of my... I don't even know what it was. Like, pre-med
MBA.
Program? I dropped out of my MBA program because of you. I'm pursuing my real passion. And they're like, oh, great, what is it? And she says she's pursuing cosmetology. And it is immediately, like, mic drop.
Like what have I done?
Right.
Like, this is terrible.
And I'm like, all right, classist Hallmark, calm down. She's happy.
I thought that was wild because the whole point of the movie and the whole, like, supposed philosophy, her whole supposed philosophy is, like, do what you love and what makes you feel fulfilled, no matter what. And then she's like, oh, cosmetology, how dare you? What?
Yeah, especially, like, what she didn't say, I don't even know what she would have said that I would have, like, found this reaction. She didn't, you know what? Professional kickball player.
Professional kickball player,
which
for
is
sure,
a,
for
a
sure.
Throwback to, can I name that movie?
Name that movie.
I cannot. It's the one that,
Jonathan Bennett.
Yeah, Aaron Samuels is in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie we did very recently where Jonathan Bennett wants to become a professional kickball player. What did you Google to find it? Jonathan Bennett, professional kickball player?
No, I just looked at our Instagram.
Oh, okay, great. Give me a hint to guess the title.
When I read the title, I think of, like, a record scratch.
Love on repeat?
Yeah, you got it.
Okay. Anyway, if she had said, I want to become a professional kickball player, I have no kickball experience, I would have been like, okay, maybe we can be worried about her. But, like, whatever. She'll make fine. She'll become a cosmetologist. Like,
yeah, she will have a vocation and, you know, have probably a pretty nice life.
Right. And she said she likes to make people feel like they're best or beautiful or whatever.
Yeah. I don't know how to cut hair. I actually had a nightmare recently where I was employed as a cosmetologist. And the other cosmetologists were like, why do you keep, like, making us do all of your haircuts and hair dyes? And I was like, oh, it's because I actually don't know how to do them. And they're like, at some point you have to do one. And I was like, I can't. I don't know how to cut hair. And they were like, what are you doing here? The end. What do you think that was about?
It's probably something about your mother. I don't know.
Anyway, you want to be a cosmetologist, be a cosmetologist.
It's also like, I don't know, what's she going to do with an MBA?
Yeah, I was like, you're going to do, like, more harm in the world with an MBA. Yeah,
and
you're
in so much debt.
Whatever. Yeah, like, just whatever.
Whatever. So that was some fun classism. Also, later we had some fun xenophobia.
That was great. Loved that.
Where the guy that her mom falls in love with, he's a heart doctor. His name is Dr. Stefan Gustaf, which I think is just meant to imply that he is from Sweden, which is why they ended up moving back to Stockholm, right?
Yeah,
okay. So anyway, so like in the scene where she goes back to the past, before she gets back together with Jason, she like arrives home and hugs her mom and her grandfather, and she's like, I love you guys. Also, mom, she just obviously is trying to avoid her mother actually having the heart attack. So she's like, mom, you know those dizzying spells you've been having? They're not nothing. We're taking you to the heart doctor. I know the best one. His name is Dr. Stefan Gustaf. You're going to love him. And then she runs out. And then Grandpa Bob is like, Dr. Stefan Gustaf sounds foreign to me. Or he says, like, I don't know. Sounds foreign to me.
Yeah.
In, like, a sort of semi-derogatory way. And I'm like, not great, Grandpa Bob.
Not great. Xenophobia against white people? It doesn't speak well for how you feel about anyone else. Which, by the way, no other people of color in the movie?
Mm-hmm. The brother and sister tag team of Dean Jackman and
You're right, actually. Yeah, and the cosmetology student.
Yes. Oh, but a feminism win. I love that the three random women who were in the coffee shop in the first scene got paid to do another days of work because they got to be in the wedding scene at the end.
Mm-hmm. That was great. Love that for them. Is this feminism? That bookstore looks really nice.
Which one?
The one that she's in when she
in
does
Seattle?
Her, yeah, in Seattle.
It's not feminism, but I'm sure. Bookstores are great.
Great. And continue.
Actually, one last thing. This is like feminism because it's about me personally.
Ooh, yes.
Did you catch...
The personal is political. Okay.
Personal is political, and I identify as female, so...
And also the future is female, so.
And also.
Sorry, can you get to your point? I'm really sorry.
So at the very end of the movie, instead of saying the end as Jason and Becca are driving off in their just married limo, because I guess I didn't even put that in the summary. There is a flash forward where they get married.
Oh, yeah. I mean, implied. Whatever. That's how Hallmark movies work.
But as they're driving off in their wedding limo at the end, instead of saying the end, it says the beginning, which I have to say was stolen from me, because that is how me, Jill Hubb, and Jess Kinnearum ended our
oh my god, not this again.
Our junior year film project in high school, where we did a whole movie set to Billy Joel's Vienna about me going off to college, and at the end, I drive off in the minivan with Jess Kinnearum's father playing my dad, and it says, instead of the end, the beginning.
Groundbreaking.
I mean, clearly it was. Hallmark stole it. We did it. That would have been, like, 2009. So, 6 years before Hallmark did it.
Do you want to call them?
I would like royalties.
Okay. Do you think you'll get as many royalties as she got on her book?
If I get anything under $2 million, I will burn this place to the ground.
You could probably sue for, like, damages now at this point, right?
I do feel very harmed. Yes. Yeah,
so there you go.
Okay. That's great. It.
All right, cool. Glad we talked about that.
Is it the best of times or the worst of times?
Here's what we talk about. If you should watch it, in what context? We rate it on our doomsday clock on a scale from noon to midnight. Noon being notoriously, it's so bad, gouge your own eyes out before you watch this terrible film. Midnight being notoriously, it's so good, you should watch it right now. It's a party in your eyeballs, party in your eyeballs. Woo, woo, woo. It's the best movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Noon bad, midnight good. Yay. Go. Helena.
Wow. That was really something.
It's the hot chocolate.
Can't blame you. You know, I was going to rate this a lot lower before we started talking, but I had a really fun time talking about it. I did not have that much fun watching it. I was kind of bored a lot of the time. I guess like a 3. Yeah. It was fine. They were cute. The two of them were cute. But I don't think they should be together. So, I don't know.
I had a lot more fun watching this one than the last movie we watched. Whether that is the movie or situational. Yeah, I thought the leads were very charismatic, which helps. Always love a Christopher Lloyd. Cannot get enough of Espresso Kiss.
Yeah, absolutely not.
Although I have to say, I never, never, ever in a movie, and I'm also talking to you bros, need a montage of something I've seen in the last hour.
Yeah, I hate it. It's one of the worst things.
But yeah, I had a lot more fun with this one than I've had with like the last couple. So I'm gonna go 4:30.
Spicy.
Espresso kiss. Espresso. What would I risk for one more espresso kiss?
You'd risk your professional reputation by rating this film so highly.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, and with that,
we'll be back in no time at all.